Freight Broker Training Guide, 2020 edition. Introduction. What is a freight broker? Freight brokers are used by the industry to arrange for the transportation required by the shipping company. They act as a link between the shipper and the carrier companies or individual drivers. Most who start in the freight brokerage business think that brokering is trucking. This is the number one common mistake that most new freight brokers make. A freight broker derives a commission for their matchmaking skills. Freight brokers are also known as truck brokers, transportation brokers, and property brokers. And the brokerage industry can span not only with trucks, but air, rail, train, and ocean liners. This course guide will deal only with the trucking industry in the 48 contiguous states using ground transportation by trucks. Freight brokers then search for business, looking for distributors, manufacturers, farmers, and shippers who use freight broker services to ship their cargo and products through trusted motor carriers. A freight broker's job is to approach them and try to identify their budget and delivery needs. Proving yourself as a trustworthy freight broker will create ongoing business with them. As a freight broker, all you have is your integrity to market yourself to your clients. A freight broker needs to use good negotiating skills to complete a competitive transaction whereby everyone is satisfied. Shipper, carrier, and broker. This course comes with a database of over 150,000 transportation profiles for you to search for new clients. To facilitate this process, the freight brokers should have a strong relationship with the motor carriers. The broker usually accepts the credit of a shipper and has, in turn, his credit accepted by the carrier. In other words, he collects from the shipper and pays the carrier, less his commission. Motor carriers can be the carrier company which run a large number of trucks by hiring truck drivers, or can be an independent truck driver known as an owner-operator running his own truck driving business. A freight broker works for the commission that he gets for efficiently matching the shipper's load with the right carrier, who will charge a fair price for delivery. Most brokers think they work for the shipper and want to lower the carrier's freight rates down. However, the broker must protect the interests of motor carrier, owner-operator, in that he collects the money from the shipper on behalf of the motor carrier. Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration, FMCSA, is the only governing body for freight brokers, which is an agency of the Department of Transportation. There are some requirements to be fulfilled before you start as a freight broker, however, there are no pre-qualifying tests or exams needed to set up the business. As a freight broker, it's necessary to analyze what are the aspirations of both the shipper and the carrier from their perspectives and try to find a common ground to make both parties happy. Brokers are unique to the transportation industry. They do not operate trucks or employ drivers, but play a role in the shipment of a variety of commodities. Brokers engaged in interstate commerce are regulated by FMCSA and are subject to several federal statutes and regulations, in particular 49 CFR 371. Brokers are required to register with FMCSA, maintain process agents to accept legal service, and establish and maintain appropriate coverage for financial liability. Brokers also have administrative and financial record-keeping requirements. Brokers are prohibited from misrepresenting themselves as motor carriers or as anything other than providers of brokerage services registered with FMCSA. In response to the Safe, Accountable, Flexible, Efficient Transportation Equity Act, a legacy for users, Safety Lou, and a petition by the American Moving and Storage Association, AMSA, the FMCSA amended 371 and other regulations. These amendments specify requirements for brokers of household goods, addressing consumer protection, financial liability coverage, and business practices. Additionally, in the future, FMCSA will assign U.S. Department of Transportation, USDOT, numbers, in addition to motor carrier, MC, numbers, to all brokers to better identify them. A broker regulated by the USDOT is defined at 49 U. South Carolina, 131022. Broker. The term broker means a person, other than a motor carrier or an employee or agent of a motor carrier, that is a principal or agent sells, offers for sale, negotiates for, or holds itself out by solicitation, advertisement, or otherwise is selling, providing, or arranging for, transportation by a motor carrier for compensation. A broker is further defined in the federal regulation at 49 CFR 371.2A. Broker means a person who, for compensation, arranges, or offers to arrange, the transportation of property by an authorized motor carrier. Motor carriers, or persons who are employees or bona fide agents of carriers, are not brokers within the meaning of this section when they arrange or offer to arrange the transportation of shipments which they are authorized to transport and which they have accepted and legally bound themselves to transport. As a transportation broker, you will be connecting shippers who need to move their commodities with carriers that can transport them. Connecting the shippers and the carriers is arranging transportation. If you are compensated for the service, then you are brokering. If you arrange the interstate transportation, by motor carrier, of a commodity for a shipper, then you are regulated by FMCSA and are required by federal statute, at 49 U. South Carolina, 13904, to register with the USDA. To be registered, FMCSA must grant you authority to operate as a broker. Registration also is referred to as authority, operating authority, or being authorized. All brokers regulated by FMCSA are required to use the services of authorized motor carriers. An authorized motor carrier has been granted authority to operate interstate and is validly registered by FMCSA. There are two classifications of regulated brokers, property or freight brokers and household goods brokers. Each classification requires a specific registration or authority. A property broker may arrange transportation of a variety of regulated commodities other than household goods. Property brokers may arrange transportation for commodities such as automobiles, electronics, or machinery. A household goods broker can arrange transportation for shipments of household goods only. Household goods regulated by FMCSA are defined at 49 CFR 375.103 as household goods, as used in connection with transportation, means personal effects, property used, or to be used, in a dwelling, when part of the equipment of the dwelling. Transportation of household goods must be arranged and paid for by the individual shipper or by another individual on behalf of the shipper. Household goods includes property moving from a factory or store if purchased with the intent to use in a dwelling, and transported at the request of the householder who also pays the transportation charges. Household goods brokers regulated by FMCSA are defined at 49 CFR 371.103 as household goods broker means a person, other than a motor carrier or an employee or a bona fide agent of a motor carrier, that is a principal or agent sells, offers to sell, negotiates for, or holds itself out by solicitation, advertisement, or otherwise sells, provides, or arranges for, transportation of household goods by a motor carrier for compensation. As a broker, you may arrange transportation of all regulated commodities, property and household goods, provided that you obtain the appropriate authorities to arrange transportation for both. If you are a broker registered by FMCSA to arrange transportation for shipments of freight and you want to expand your business to include arranging transportation for shipments of household goods, then you must apply to FMCSA to obtain additional authority as a household goods broker. The same holds true if you are registered as a household goods broker and wish to expand your business to arrange transportation for regulated freight. You must apply to the FMCSA to obtain additional authority as a property broker. Difference between freight forwarder and freight broker. A freight forwarder is a person or entity that holds itself out to the general public as providing transportation of property for compensation and in the ordinary course of its business, assembles and consolidates, or provides for assembling and consolidating, shipments and performs or provides for break bulk and distribution operations of the shipments. Assumes responsibility for the transportation from the place of receipt to the place of destination and uses for any part of the transportation a rail, motor, or water carrier subject to the jurisdiction of either FMCSA or the Surface Transportation Board. Freight forwarder. The term freight forwarder means a person holding theirself out to the general public, other than as a pipeline, rail, motor, or water carrier, to provide transportation of property for compensation and in the ordinary course of its business and a. assembles and consolidates or provides for assembling and consolidating of shipments and performs or provides for break bulk and distribution operations of shipments. B. Assumes responsibility for the transportation from the place of receipt to the place of destination, and C. uses for any part of the transportation a carrier subject to jurisdiction under this subtitle. The term does not include a person using transportation of an air carrier subject to Part A of Subtitle 7, 49, USC Chapters 401-465. Air Commerce and Safety. Freight forwarders are required to have operating authority from FMCSA, if their businesses involve interstate commerce. What makes freight forwarders similar to motor carriers is that they may employ drivers and operate equipment as motor carriers to transport property. Freight forwarders are different from motor carriers in the way they handle the commodities they transport. A motor carrier transports a shipment from a specific point of origin to a specific destination. For example, a motor carrier is employed to transport a shipment or 1,000 pounds of paper from Wausau, Wisconsin, to Fort Wayne, Indiana. A motor carrier can handle multiple shipments, but each shipment has a specific origin and destination. When a shipment moves from point to point, the motor carrier's only role is to transport it. Freight forwarders may receive multiple shipments from multiple points of origin and combine those shipments into one shipment going to a single destination. Freight forwarders also may take a single shipment from a single point of origin and break it into multiple shipments going to single or multiple destinations. Freight forwarders also may employ motor carriers to accomplish that task. Freight forwarders, in addition to transporting property, offer other logistical services for shippers by coordinating the composition and movement of their shipments. As an example, a freight forwarder receives a shipment of 30,000 pounds of clothing from a factory in Greensboro, North Carolina. That shipment is separated by the freight forwarder into three 10,000-pound shipments to be transported to destinations in Illinois, New York, and California. After separating the shipments, the freight forwarder employs a motor carrier to transport one shipment from North Carolina to California. The shipment to California is transported under the authority of the freight forwarder. The Motor Carrier Act of 1980 deregulated the motor carrier industry. ICC restrictions on the entry of transport firms limited competition and kept prices high. During regulation, transport carriers were allowed to establish rates that would recover their total cost of transportation that included a reasonable return on invested equity. Deregulation was to introduce a greater degree of economic efficiency and competitiveness to the marketplace. Many new carriers interested into the trucking industry. In order to give the legal property broker name definition and to cover a larger group of licensed and unlicensed transportation facilitator, the Transportation Intermediaries Association was formed. TIA, a member organization, calls them generically 3PLS, third-party logistics, companies. TIA defines 3PLS as facilitators that arrange for the efficient and economical movement of property and goods. This association has taken on the mantra of establishing the generally accepted professional standards and ethics for unlicensed and licensed property brokers. Under deregulation, the compensation is not defined and the intermediary has no dual agency responsibilities, therefore the amount of compensation for the services rendered is left up to the broker's ability to source, add value, arrange for, purchase, sell and negotiate the price for the transport of the freight transaction and provide the necessary contract paperwork for all parties to the freight transaction. Intermediaries have just three major costs: purchase transportation costs, personnel costs and administrative costs. Since deregulation, property brokers have marketed and sold shippers on the concept that by their purchasing, facilitating and arranging for the freight transaction and then reselling the same freight transaction to the transport carrier ultimately ensures to guarantee the shipper the lowest freight price. That would be true if the shipper knew the gross margin before or after the freight transaction. Shippers do not review brokerage gross margins before the freight transaction nor ask to review the gross margin subsequently. Unless the shipper as a party to the transaction, under the law, asks the broker the gross margin on the freight transaction, the broker has no obligation to disclose up front. Conversely, unless asked, a freight broker has no obligation to disclose to the transport carrier what the shipper paid. Very few, if any, freight property brokers ever disclose such information to either party. Once a freight transaction is purchased by a freight broker, the broker is free to use whatever media, system, business acumen, negotiation skills or other means to make as much gross profit margins and correspondent compensation as possible. Thus gross margins, compensation and profits have continued to increase since deregulation. Substantially, all of the advertising is targeted at the spot market. The spot market is that fertile ground where brokers can negotiate and maximize the largest gross margins. The spot markets are the spots the broker will find transport carriers with available load capacities. Freight brokers know where there are more transport carriers with equipment capacity than freight. They also know small carrier drivers get tired waiting at the spot for a load and are getting stressed to get back home to their family where generally a good paying load is waiting. Each year thousands of transport carriers go out of business hauling freight brokered out of spot markets. In many of these spots, brokerage margins can reach as high as 30%. Exclusive freight agent. When you start off as an agent to a freight broker, more than likely, They will hire you as an exclusive agent, meaning they want you to work with them, and them alone. Rarely will you be able to work for two different brokers at the same time. This is more of a sales agent that sells freight to different broker agents like you. Take this time to learn the industry and find your niche as you prepare to start your own freight brokerage. Regardless if you are a broker or agent, both are at risk of losing customers to whom they do business with. Getting your license. The rules governing applications for operating authority are stated in Regulations 49 CFR 365 and 366. The process to obtain operating authority as a broker begins with FMCS's application for Motor Property Carrier and Broker Authority Form OP1. Becoming a freight broker requires the applicant to submit three forms to the FMCSA. Form number 1, OP1 form. The first is Form OP1, and this is the application for broker authority. The OP1 form can be downloaded as a portable document format, PDF file from FMCSA's website at http://www.fmcsa.gov/form/print/rlforms.htm. You also have the option to file your OP1 application online. You can apply online at http://www.fmcsa.gov/online-registration. This method is highly recommended. You can follow step-by-step instructions to assist you in completing the online OP1 form for the appropriate broker authorities. The Motor Carrier Authority application form is 4 pages long. Broker authority is a license granted by the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration, and it is required to operate as a freight broker within the United States. Applying for broker authority requires the applicant to submit his name, business contact information, and the legal name of his business as defined in his home state if he plans to operate his brokerage under a business name instead of his legal name DBA name. The filing option for broker of property should be selected when filling out the OP-1 form. Once downloaded, the OP-1 form allows you to input the required information directly on the form from your computer and then print it out. If you prefer, you can print out a blank form and input the information manually. If access to FMCSA website is not available to you, then you can request an OP1 form packet be sent to you by U.S. mail by contacting them at 800-832-5660. Once completed, you may submit the form via U.S. mail. The OP1 form comes with instructions to assist you completing and submitting the form. There is a $300 non-refundable filing fee for the OP1 form. Once OP1 is accepted, 4 to 6 weeks. First, you will receive a letter from FMCSA with your FMCSA number listed. You will receive a final authority letter a few weeks later. Operating authority. Depending on the type of authority that is granted, the FMCS operating authority is also referred to as an MC, FF, or MX number. Unlike the used a number application process, a company may need to obtain multiple operating authorities to support its planned business operations. Operating authority dictates the type of operation a company may undertake, the cargo it may carry, and the geographical area in which it may legally operate. Costs for obtaining an operating authority. Separate filing fees must be submitted for each individual operating authority. The cost is $300. This is due at the time of processing for each authority sought. Definitions of common, contract, and broker authorities. Common carriers provide for hire truck transportation to the general public. Common carriers must be sure to file for cargo insurance and both liability buy and PD insurances. Contract carriers provide for hire truck transportation to specific, individual shippers, based on contracts. Contract carriers must file only liability buy and PD insurance. Brokers coordinate the transportation of cargo belonging to others. For this they are compensated, utilizing for hire carriers to provide the actual truck transportation. The broker must file a surety bond or trust fund agreement. Form number 2, BMC 84 or BMC 85 form. The second form is the BMC 84 or BMC 85, which is used to provide proof of a surety bond BMC 84 or trust fund BMC 85 for $10,000. A very important part of your application is proof of financial responsibility. As a broker, you must have adequate protection. Financial responsibility is protection of your business against liability. All are required to have either a surety bond or a trust fund as financial responsibility. Proof of financial responsibility is a condition to obtaining and maintaining operating authority. Without it, you will not be granted authority as a broker. Your bond must be maintained as a condition of your operating authority if, while conducting business as a broker, you decide to change bonding companies or the financial institution that holds your trust fund, then you must file a new BMC 84 or BMC 85 form with FMCSA showing that your business still has adequate financial responsibility. Remember, financial responsibility is a condition of your authority. If it is reported to FMCSA that you no longer have financial responsibility, then your broker authority will be revoked. As a broker, you submit a property broker surety bond form BMC 84 as proof of a surety bond covering your business or a property broker's trust fund agreement form BMC 85 as proof of a trust fund. There is no filing fee for either the BMC 84 or BMC 85 forms as they are just legal requirement to provide proof of coverage. The bond amount you pay for your particular bond will depend on the type of bond and the financial institution that will provide the surety bond to your company. The surety bond or the trust fund ensures the financial responsibility of the broker by providing payments to shippers or motor carriers if the broker fails to carry out their contracts, agreements, or arrangements for the supplying of transportation by authorized motor carriers. Financial responsibility is defined in the Regulation 49 CFR 387.5 as financial responsibility. The financial reserves, for example, insurance policies or surety bonds sufficient to satisfy liability amounts set forth in this subpart 49 CFR part 387, subpart A covering public liability. Beginning October 1, 2013, a broker will need to obtain and file with FMCSA a surety bond or trust fund agreement in the amount of $75,000 to comply with FMCSA's financial security requirements. Termination by replacement. Broker surety bonds or trust fund agreements which have been accepted by the FMCSA under these rules may be replaced by other surety bonds or trust fund agreements. The liability of the retiring surety or trustee under such surety bond or trust fund agreements shall be considered as having terminated as of the effective date of the replacement surety bond or trust fund agreement. However, such termination shall not affect the liability of the surety or the trustee hereunder for the payment of any damages arising as the result of contracts, agreements, or arrangements made by the broker for the supplying of transportation prior to the date such termination becomes effective. Cancellation notice. The surety bond and the trust fund agreement may be cancelled only upon 30 days written notice to the FMCSA. This must be completed on prescribed form BMC 36, by the principal or surety for the surety bond, and on prescribed form BMC 85, by the trust or / broker or trustee for the trust fund agreement. The notice period commences upon the actual receipt of the notice at the FMCSA's Washington, D.C. office. Links to surety bond partner providers. Form number 3, BOC 3 form. Another important part of your application for broker authority is the form BOC 3, designation of agent for service of process, often referred to as a process agent. A process agent is an individual who will accept legal process on your behalf and forward it to you for a response. Brokers are required to designate a process agent for each state where they have offices or write contracts, as stated in 49 CFR 366.4b. The last form is the BOC 3, which is used to register process agents. There is space on the form to enter the contact information for all process agents from every state if needed. There is a $50 filing fee for the BOC 3 form. Appendix B at the end of the course has a list of processing agents to choose from. If you have not fulfilled all the broker requirements within 20 days of filing your OP1 application, the FMCSA will issue you a notice that you have 60 days from the date of the notice in which to meet all the requirements or your application will be dismissed. Which means you have to complete both the BOC 3 and BMC 84 forms to be an active broker. Website link, http://www.fmcsa.gov/registration/licensing/agents.htm. You are ready to apply for broker authority when you have completed the OPE1 form, BMC 84 or 85 form, and BOC 3 form. Be sure to check the forms for accuracy before you submit them. Errors and omissions can delay the processing of your application, ultimately delaying the granting of your authority. The FMCSA review of broker applications. After your application for broker authority has been submitted, it will be reviewed by FMCSA staff. The federal regulation at 49 CFR 365.109 requires that FMCSA staff review your application for correctness, completeness, and adequacy of the evidence that you, as a broker, have the required amount of financial responsibility and are fit, willing, and able to comply with all applicable statutes and regulations. Minor errors found on your application may be corrected while going through the review process, however, incomplete applications will be rejected. Rejection of your application will delay the issuance of your operating authority. It is imperative that, before you file your application, you check the form and ensure that all the information is accurate and that the form is complete. Closely follow the instructions that come with the OPE1 form, or as you submit the OPE1 form online. Applicants for Household Goods Broker Authority have to go through an additional step in the review process. To better protect consumers from deceptive business practices in the industry, applicants for Household Goods Broker Authority undergo vetting. Information submitted by the applicant is closely examined, and in many cases verified to ensure that the applicant has not evaded accountability for non-compliance with federal regulations by using the name of another company. Vetting can take up to 10 weeks. If you are applying for authority as a household goods broker, it is very important that you ensure that your application is accurate, including avoiding any omissions on the application. The discovery of omitted information during vetting could result in rejection of the application. If the FMCSA review of your application finds it acceptable, then a notice of the application will be posted in the FMCSA register. If you have not done so during the application process, you must submit a Form BMC-84, evidence that your brokerage is covered by a surety bond of $10,000 or $25,000, depending on type of brokerage, property or household goods. A Form BMC-85 is the required evidence that your brokerage is covered by a trust fund of $10,000 or $25,000 before authority may be granted. After a summary of your application for authority is posted in the FMCSA register, any person who opposes the approval of your application, on the grounds that you are not fit, willing, and able to comply with FMCSA's regulations, has 10 days from the date of publication in the FMCSA register to file a protest. If no one opposes the application, then a certificate will be issued making it effective. UCR Registration, Unified Carrier Registration System. The UCR agreement applies to the following types of operations of passenger and property in interstate commerce: motor carrier, motor private carrier, freight forwarder, broker, and leasing company. Unified Carrier Registration is a state permit required for most interstate carriers and brokers. If you have a used it, MC, or FF number, you will likely also need the UCR to be in compliance at the state level. Attached in Appendix C is the UCR 2013 application. This can also be downloaded at https://www.ucr.in.gov. The fees are determined by fleet size with brokers and freight forwarders on the minimum fee bracket. Fleet size is determined by the number of commercial vehicles listed on your used it number or by the total number of commercial vehicles operated. Leasing companies not a motor carrier, brokers and freight forwarders who do not operate any commercial motor vehicles shall be charged a UCR fee at the lowest bracket level for the registration year. 0 to 2 bracket equals $150. This fee may vary depending on the state you register in. All registrants are required to submit an annual filing of information required within the UCR agreement. Requirements for all brokers. All brokers must comply with all the requirements of the regulations in 49 CFR 371. These regulations require records to be kept and applied how you conduct business. The FMCSA encourages you to familiarize yourself with these regulations. You can access them on the FMCSA website at www.fmcsa.gov. Records, rules, and accounting. A broker shall keep a record of each transaction. For purposes of this section, brokers may keep master database lists of consigners and the address and registration number of the carrier, rather than repeating this information for each transaction. The record shall show the name and address of the consigner, the name, address, and registration number of the originating motor carrier, the bill of lading or freight bill number, the amount of compensation received by the broker for the brokerage service performed in the name of the payer, a description of any non-brokerage service performed in connection with each shipment or other activity, the amount of compensation received for the service, and the name of the payer, and the amount of any freight charges collected by the broker and the date of payment to the carrier. Brokers shall keep the records required by this section for a period of 3 years. Each party to a brokered transaction has the right to review the record of the transaction required to be kept by these rules. Misrepresentation. When working as a broker, you may not do business, including advertise, in any name other than the name stated on your registration or operating authority. A broker shall not perform or offer to perform any brokerage service in any name other than that in which its registration is issued. A broker shall not, indirectly or directly, represent its operations to be that of a carrier. Any advertising shall show the broker status of the operation. Rebating and compensation. A broker shall not charge or receive compensation from a motor carrier for brokerage service where the broker owns or has a material beneficial interest in the shipment. The broker is able to exercise control over the shipment because the shipper owns the broker owns the shipper, or there is common ownership of the two. A broker shall not give or offer to give anything of value to any shipper, consigner or consignee except inexpensive advertising items given for promotional purposes. Accounting requirements, in compliance with Regulation 49 CFR 371.13. If you operate other businesses in addition to your brokerage, especially other transportation businesses such as motor carriers, then you must maintain your financial accounts so that revenues and expenses from your brokerage are separate from those of the other businesses. If your brokerage and the other businesses share common expenses, then your records must show which expenses belong to the brokerage. Doing business only with motor carriers having valid USDIT numbers and operating authority, 49 CFR 371.105. As a household goods broker, you may do business only with a motor carrier that has a valid USDIT number and valid household goods motor carrier authority. You may not arrange transportation with motor carriers having only property motor carrier authority or household goods authority that is under suspension or has been revoked. You are encouraged to regularly verify the authority status of motor carriers that you do business with. You can check the status of a motor carrier's operating authority by going to the FMCS licensing and insurance website at http://lipublic.fmcsa.gov. When you arrive at that website, click Continue at the bottom. On the next web page, click Choose Menu option in the upper right corner. When the drop-down menu appears, click Carrier Search. On the next web page, enter the motor carrier's USDIT or MC number and click Search. You will see the results of your search, provided that the motor carrier is registered with FMCSA. If the carrier you are searching for appears, then choose either HTML or PDF to get a status report. http://safer.fmcsa.gov/company-snapshot.asks. Things to know before you start. First thing to start up the business professionally is to decide the form of business and giving it a name. Incorporation is not mandatory but recommended. Other forms that can be well considered are the sole proprietorship, partnership, subchapter S corporation and the limited liability company, LLC. Incorporation can be easily processed without hiring an attorney. You can search for the articles of incorporation over the internet. They are not more than 2 pages in length. The Federal Identification Number, FEIN, is needed for incorporation or partnership businesses. You need to apply to get the fine. However, for sole proprietors, Social Security number is sufficient for completing the paperwork. Forms of business you can consider for your freight brokering business. 1. Incorporation. 2. Proprietorship. 3. Partnership. 4. Subchapter S Corporation. 5. Limited Liability Company. 6. UCR Registration, page 9. 7. SCAT Code Registration, page 74. Regarding the selection of the business name, it can be your own name or any other name you would like your business to be called as. The name has to be unique and the broker needs to inquire that the name is available and not being used by someone already. The terminology used is doing business as name or the fictitious name. A country or state level search can be done to confirm its availability. If the business you are planning is a partnership business, then it is highly recommended to work out the partnership agreement. The partnership will form an outline for the scope of functions and expectations of each of the partner. The business setup requirements for a freight broker are very basic and inexpensive. A toll-free number is highly desirable but not essential. We recommend using ringcentral.com for all your telecommunication needs. Using the ringcentral.com service allows you to have a virtual office. You can make unlimited incoming and outgoing calls within the US and they give you a local fax line that will send PDF fax documents to your email, and you can get this package for around $30 a month. They also have more features you can read on their website, http://www.ringcentral.com. Creating an office is quite simple as a freight broker. Being a freight broker is the perfect business that can be operated within the confines of your home. When you decide to increase the size of your brokerage by adding freight agents, a true office will definitely be needed at that time. Whether you're telecommuting to your new office or working at home, Running your freight, setting up your office requires some diligent thought and planning. Consideration needs to be made with thought to functionality, lighting, and ergonomics. Another important thing to remember that if you tend to take a home office deduction on your federal income tax return, there are other issues you will to be aware of. Startup requirements include 1. A personal computer. 2. High-speed internet connection, cable or DSL. 3. A telephone with ringcentral.com. 4. A reliable fax machine or ringcentral.com. 5. Filing cabinet. 6. Loadboard membership, findfreightloads.com. 7. Microsoft Office, Word and Excel mainly. 8. Email system, Gmail or Yahoo. 9. Website, included with course. Common equipment types: dry van, box trailer. Freight trailers, also called dry vans or simply boxes, are designed to carry virtually any kind of boxed, crated, or palletized freight. Configurations: standard lengths, 28, 32, 36, 40, 42, 43, 45, 48, and 53. Standard widths, 96 to 102 maximum weight loaded, 46,000 pounds. Standard heights, 12.5 13.5 overall. Shorter trailers are typically used for local deliveries or in tandem truck trains. Standard axle/wheel configuration, 2-axle/8-wheel. Features and options: roll-up doors, rear swing doors, 1 or 2 side doors, roller beds. When used for produce, produce vents are added and insulated with roofs of wood, tin, or fiberglass. Reefer, refrigerated trailer, use. Reefers are insulated and refrigerated trailers designed to transport perishable items. Commodities transported include vegetables, fruits, milk, juices, meats, and poultry. Configurations: standard lengths, 28, 32, 36, 40, 48, and 53. Standard widths, 96 to 102. Standard heights, 12.5 13.5 overall. Shorter trailers are typically used for local deliveries or in tandem truck trains. Standard axle/wheel configuration, 2-axle/8-wheel. For heavier loads, 3-axle/12-wheel or 4-axle/1-wheel configurations are also available. Features and options: rear swing doors or roll-up doors, 1 or 2 side doors, movable bulkheads, lift gates, and temperature recording and monitoring systems, single or multi-temperature models, flatbeds and single drop decks, step decks. Platform, flatbed, trailers are designed to transport oversized cargo that normally would not fit into standard freight trailers. Platform trailers are used especially for the transport of goods that must be loaded from the side or top of the trailer. Standard cargo for platform trailers includes ocean freight containers, machinery, construction equipment, lumber, plywood, steel, pipe and rebar. Variations: standard lengths, 26, 40, 42, 45, and 48. Extended lengths, 60, 65, and 70. Double drops and RGNs, removable goosenecks. Use: specialty trailers are designed to transport oversized cargo that normally would not fit onto standard freight trailers. Specialty trailers are used especially for the transport of goods that must be loaded from the top of the trailer. Standard cargo for specialty trailers includes heavy equipment, machinery, farm equipment, windmills, transformers, etc. Variations: standard lengths, 48 and 53. Extended lengths, 60, 65, and 70. Weight allotted for hauling determined by axles included on trailer and configuration. Containers: skeletal carrier, drayage. Container carriers are designed to transport standard international cargo containers of 20 to 45. Some models are able to transport non-standard and oversized containers. Configurations: models designed to transport a single specific size container, 20, 40, 45, etc. Models designed in adjustable, zoom, configurations to work with a range of different size standard and non-standard containers. Configuration wheel standard, 2-axle/8-wheel. For heavy loads, 3-axle/12-wheel configurations are also available. Brackets especially designed to hold the container carrier. Tankers. Food grade, chemicals, petroleum. Tanker trailers are designed for the carrying of a wide range of goods fluids. Standard cargo carriers include refined gasoline, heating oil, natural gas, and acids, and industrial chemicals, caustic soda, clay and mud and cooking oils, corn syrup, orange juice, milk and other foodstuffs. Require some cargo tanker trailers specially designed fluid. For example, carriers designed to transport caustic soda and acids require some aspects and exterior paint and equipment that will withstand the effects of corrosive goods. Variations. Standard lengths, 40.420.430.45, 48 and 53. Configuration wheel standard, 2-axle 8-wheel. For heavy loads, 3-axle/12-wheel, 4-axle/16-wheel or configurations are also available. Features and options. Multiple compartments, 1-7. Vacuum pumps. Measurement equipment. Insulated tanks. Pressure tanks. Ladders. Walkways. Hose carriers. Belly cabinets. Dry bulk trailer. Hopper use. Dry trailers is mainly used in the transportation of dry commodities such as grain, shelled corn, hulled rice, beans, gravel, limestone, loose and pulverized, and sand. It is a safe transportation method and very useful for long distances. Variations. Standard lengths, 26 to 42. Standard widths, 96 to 102. Hopper configurations, single, double and triple. Open and closed end configurations. Steel and aluminum models. There are available singles, doubles, and 3-trailer truck trains. Notes. Dry bulk trailers use rolled tarpaulin tops rather than rigid tops. Typical dry bulk trailers usually use hoppers to unload, or empty conveyor systems. The international trailer manufacturers produce a variety of models that are designed for different freight configurations. Logistics van and deep drop furniture use. Deep drop vans are designed especially for transporting large, bulky and relatively light cargo, weight to volume. Deep drop vans are mainly used in the transportation of specific kinds of goods such as furniture, household and electronics. Variations. Standard lengths, 45, 48 and 53 overall. Standard heights, 13.6 overall. Standard widths, 96 to 102 overall. Rear doors, standard swing doors. Side doors, 1 or 2 side swing doors. Options and features. Using the lower rear surface to facilitate loading. Air ride suspension to protect the fragile cargo. Compartments, belly mat and ramps. Auto transport tractor trailer use. Trailers are used to transport auto transport cars, sports cars, small trucks. It is the movement of these goods from the former manufacturing plants to distributors, but the most common ports, ro-ro ships, to distributors of the interior. Auto variations. Auto transporters are produced in 2 general configurations. The trucks are produced cars in 2 models. Trailers are capable for transporting up to 9 vehicles pulled by tractor unit standard. Truck tractor is up to 3 vehicles while the trailer transports up to 6 cars. There is also a private covered car trailers that are specially made for use in the transportation of high-value cars. Notes. Different trailer manufacturers from all over the world produce a wide range of models that have been designed for different shipping configurations. There is a large market for private party auto transporter in the transfer of families and the transfer of specialized vehicles and high value locally and internationally as well. Dimensions, weight and capacity are the data that varies according to the requirements of cargo, manufactured goods trailers, a national model, and the state as well as the requirements of the provincial road. General guidelines. Maximum overall dimensions, unpermitted, width, 96 inches. Width, designated highways, 102 inches height, 13 feet, 6 inches GVW, gross vehicle weight, 80,000 pounds. Length of semi-trailer, 53 feet length of semi-trailer, non-designated highway, 50 feet length of combination tractor-trailer, with or without load, no limitation units permitted in train, 2. Semi-trailers or truck and semi-trailer truck tractor, semi-trailer and trailer or tractor and length of a combination of tractor, semi-trailer, and trailer or tractor and, 2, semi-trailers or truck and semi-trailer of trailer with or without load or pickup truck. Semi-trailers are designed for recreational living purposes, and additional trailer or semi-trailer, 65 feet. The semi-trailers that are longer than 50 feet shall have a wheelbase of 37 feet to 41 feet. This is measured from the kingpin coupling to the center of the axles or to the center of the tandem axle assembly in case it is equipped with 2 axles. Semi-trailers longer than 50 feet are limited to 3 axles and shall operate only on designated highways. The measurement of semi-trailers and trailers shall be done from the front vertical plane of the foremost transverse load supporting structure to the rearmost transverse load supporting structure. Safety and energy conservation devices are not supposed to be included in the length measurement, but not limited to impact-absorbing bumpers, rear-view mirrors, turn signal lamps, marker lamps, steps and handholds for entry and egress, flexible fender extensions, mud flaps or splash and suppressant devices, load-induced tire bulge, refrigeration or heating units, or air compressors. However, any device that is not designed or intended to be used in the cargo carrying shall be excluded from the length determination. Projection beyond front of vehicles, 3 feet. Overhang beyond rear vehicles, any amount is permissible as long as it doesn't exceed the legal length. However, if this overhang is 4 feet or more, then a 12-inch red square flag in the daytime and a red light or lantern at night shall be displayed on the extreme rear. The weight distribution analysis process. Position of trailer tandems. Performing a weight distribution analysis can prevent building trucks that are overloaded in normal use, causing problems for users and the equipment installer. Overloads can shorten the life of a vehicle and its components. Overloads can also prevent compliance with weight laws and federal safety standards. Sliding your trailer tandems toward the front or back of the vehicle will primarily change the weight distribution between the tractor's drive axles and the trailer tandems. Sliding the tandems can also affect the weight on the steering axle, but to a rather small degree. For the purpose of focusing exclusively on positioning the trailer tandems, we're going to ignore the minor changes to the weight of the steer axle. It's rarely a factor when deciding where to place your trailer tandems. By sliding the trailer tandems forward, you will put more weight on the trailer tandems and take weight off the tractor's drive axles. Conversely, by sliding the trailer tandems toward the rear of the trailer, you will take weight off the trailer tandems and put more weight onto the tractor's drive axles. The number one most important concept in redistributing weight across axles. Sliding the trailer tandems forward adds weight to the tandems, sliding them back removes weight from the tandems. Amount of weight moved per hole. What and why of weight distribution? Weight distribution is the amount of the total vehicle weight imposed on the ground at an axle, group of axles, or an individual wheel. The weight on a truck must be distributed on the axles to comply with the chassis manufacturer's axle ratings and weight laws. Having the correct wheelbase on the chassis and placing bodies and loads in the proper place will ensure that axles are loaded correctly. Performing a weight distribution analysis identifies the proper axle loadings before building a truck. Axle capacities are limited either by the axle capacity or legal weight limits, whichever is lower. Both trucks in Image A have a front axle rated at 12,000 pounds, limiting the weight on those axles. The rear axle on the single drive truck is limited by the axle capacity or legal weight restrictions to 20,000 pounds. The two rear axles on the tandem drive truck are limited either by axle capacities or legal weight restrictions to 17,000 pounds for each axle, or a total of 34,000 pounds for the pair of axles. The trailer tandems lock into place with a set of locking pins that slide into holes drilled into the tandem slider rail. You can see the holes in the slider rail in the picture to the left. Click to enlarge. The distance between the locking pin holes on the trailer will be the main factor affecting how much weight is moved per hole. This distance varies between the different trailer manufacturers, and the larger the distance between the holes, the more weight will be shifted with each hole. The two main hole spacings you'll find are 4 inches and 6 inches. You can estimate that you will move 250 pounds per hole for 4-inch spacing, and 400 pounds per hole for 6-inch spacing. This will help you estimate how many holes you'll have to slide the trailer tandems to move the proper amount of weight necessary in order to get the axle weights legal. Again, we're assuming the weight won't change on the steer axles for these examples, but in reality it might change a little bit. Most of the time the change in weight of the steer axle will have little or no effect on where you'll put the trailer tandems. The weight on the steering axle is significantly altered by the amount of fuel you have in the position of your fifth wheel. Calculate the weight distribution of a vehicle using the following steps. 1. Determine the weight and center of gravity location for all of the components and items to be considered. 2. Multiply the center of gravity distance times the weight to get the moment for each component and item. 3. Add all of the moments and divide by the wheelbase to get the weight on the rear axle. 4. Subtract the rear axle weight from the total weight to get the front axle weight. AB. Center of front axle to back of cab. AF. After frame. The distance from the center of the back axle to the rear end of the chassis frame. BA. Bumper to axle. BL. Body length. Overall length of the body. CA. Cab to axle. Distance from back of the cab to center of the rear axle. CB. Cab to body. Distance between back of cab to front of body. WB. Wheelbase. Distance from center of the front axle to center of rear axle. Example 1. Steer, 11,590. Drives, 34,700. Trailer, 32,100. Gross, 78,390. You scale your truck at a truck stop and receive your scale ticket. The slider rail hole spacing is 6 inches, which will move 400 pounds of weight per hole, and let's assume the steer axle weight won't change. What would you have to do in order to get your truck legal? Steer. 11,590. Steer remains unchanged for this example. Drives. 33,900. Drives. 34,700 minus 800. 2 holes x 400 pounds each. Trailer. 32,900. Trailer. 32,100 minus 800. 2 holes x 400 pounds each. Gross. 78,390. Remains the same. Example 2. Steer, 11,320. Drives, 31,300. Trailer, 35,050. Gross, 77,670. You scale your truck at a truck stop and receive your scale ticket. The slider rail hole spacing is 4 inches, which will move 250 pounds of weight per hole, and let's assume the steer axle weight won't change. What would you have to do in order to get your truck legal? In this example, the trailer tandems are overweight, 34,000 pound maximum, by 1,050 pounds. Assuming each hole in the tandem slider rail moves 250 pounds, you would have to slide your trailer tandems toward the rear of the truck a minimum of 5 holes to transfer enough weight from your trailer tandems to your drive axles in order to get your axle weights legal. The end result would be approximately. Steer. 11,320. Steer remains unchanged for this example. Drives. 32,550. Drives. 31,300 plus 1,250. 5 holes x 250 pounds each. Trailer. 33,800. Trailer. 35,050 minus 1,250. 5 holes x 250 pounds each. Gross. 77,670. Remains the same. Trailer capacities. 1. Maximum weight is 46,500 pounds per trailer, 48 or 53. 2. 22 to 24 single stack standard, 48 by 40, pallets in a 48 trailer. 3. 26 to 28 single stack standard, 48 by 40, pallets in a 53 trailer. 4. Every 2 single stacked standard pallets take up 4 linear feet of truck space. Measurement calculations. Types of pallets. 1. Compute cubic feet equals LXWXHX number of pieces slash 1728. 2. Compute dimensional weight equals LXWXHX number of pieces slash dim factor. 3. Convert kilograms to pounds equals number of kilograms x 2.2046. Pallets and configurations. Shipping and logistics managers all need to know the basics of loading a different trailers and sizes. Whether you have a 48-foot trailer or 53-footer, it will make a difference. If you have 40x48 skids, you have the choice of running them straight into the trailer, pinwheeling, or turning them all sideways. The following scenarios would apply. 48-foot trailer. 53-foot trailer, 24 skids loaded straight into the trailer. 26 skids loaded straight into the trailer. 26 skids pinwheeled. 28 skids pinwheeled. 28 skids turn sideways. 30 skids turn sideways.